SBS, a world of difference. You're with SBS Ukrainian on mobile, online and on radio.
Ви з SBS українською на мобільних, в інтернеті та на радіо.
Доброго дня, шановні радіослухачі. В Сіднеї нещодавно проходила виставка Artists for Ukraine, організована австралійцями, художниками, які надали свої роботи для продажу на користь української благодійної організації «Голоси дітей». На виставці «Artists for Ukraine» в суботу 28 травня виступала з промовою Джейн Малкольм, батьки якої загинули в авіакатастрофі MH17. З тих пір Джейн продовжує свою боротьбу за покарання винних. Її розповідь про боротьбу сповнена гірких висновків. «Моя мама та відчим Карл та Майкл Клеменс загинули 17 липня 2014 року. Обоє вони були вчителями. Ця подорож була першою великою подорожю для них. Вони хотіли так відсвяткувати вихід Майкла на пенсію. В цій катастрофі загинуло 298 людей, серед них 80 дітей. Але коли я була в саду пам'яті MH17 в Нідерландах, мене вразило, яка кількість молоді, підлітків загинула. З моєї точки зору, вони теж ще діти. Люди, які загинули, залишили по собі хвилю горя. На церемонії прощання я сиділа поряд з літньою парою, яка втратила всіх дітей та онуків. Я не знаю, як можна після цього продовжувати нормально жити. Я рада, що нарешті міжнародна спільнота більш серйозно сприймає цю загрозу. Але не можу позбавитися думки, що якби вони одразу так відреагували, то сьогоднішньої біди б не було. Коли літак було збито, це ще був Обама президентом Америки. І ми на Заході не знали всю глибину та підступність російської пропаганди. Я загубила лік версіям, хто, як і коли збив літак. Чи то були українці із ракетою, чи то з літаком, чи то іспанський диспетчер, чи взагалі літак було наповнено замороженими тілами. Я не жартую зараз. Мій досвід аналізу дезінформації такий. Існує два підходи. Перший – це атакувати правду, ніби факти не мають значення. Дати мільйон версій, кожна з яких не така вже й правдоподібна. Але це викликає втому і відчуття, що знайти правду неможливо. І в результаті відмовитись від пошуків правди. І наша преса не розпізнала цієї практики швидко. Вони намагалися давати обом сторонам різні можливості висловитися. Другий підхід – це атакувати жертву з метою насмішки, кепкування, звичайний булінг, бути висміяною тим, хто вбив твоїх батьків, це надзвичайно вражає. Це всього лиш демонстрація сили. Що ти можеш зробити проти великої країни? Правда не має значення, бо у них є сила. А що є у тебе? Я та інші сім'ї загиблих маємо підтримку австралійського уряду в спільному розслідуванні. Люди запитували мене, чому я продовжую боротися за справедливість. Адже Росія ніколи не визнає свою провину. По-перше, будь-який тиск на Росію допомагає Україні. Так само я хочу добитися справедливості для моїх батьків. Так само і для інших жертв цієї війни. По-друге, я хочу, щоб докази були зібрані і вбивці були названі. Правда має значення. Це важливо, щоб люди, які вчиняють військові злочини, знали, що вони будуть покарані і нікуди не втечуть. З мого досвіду співпраці, можливості українців здобувати докази є надзвичайними. Це підтверджують міжнародні партнери. Після такої трагедії ти опиняєшся у пастці. Ти розчавлений болем і не дуже хочеш спілкуватися з пресою. Але якщо ти не будеш, про твою трагедію забудуть. Українці у світі мають ту ж саму проблему і навіть більшу. Якщо проблема України – війна, зникне з новин, вони можуть втратити країну. І наостанок, я б хотіла поговорити про те, що кожен з нас може зробити для України. Це дуже легко думати, що війна в Україні десь там далеко і мене не стосується. Але я живе підтвердження, що це не так. По-перше, висилайте гроші. По-друге, якби хтось вломився в твій дім, ти би не сприйняв порад від друзів та поліції, що ти мусиш посунутись і дати злочинцю місце і примиритися з ним. Будьте обережні зі словами. Це звучить нібито добре, коли ви кажете «Я сподіваюся миру в Україні». Але Путін також сподівається миру в Україні. Правда вже без українців. Може краще сподіватися перемоги. Росіяни. Всі росіяни, яких я зустрічаю на мітингу з українцями – чудові люди. Але не забувайте, що вони в меншинстві. Моя невістка з Білорусі забрала дитину з російської суботньої школи через настрої в школі. З мого досвіду спілкування про трагедію MH17, коли люди, наслухавшись відео на Ютубі, казали мені, що я не жертва, а оплачена акторка. Якщо ви хочете поговорити про війну, краще одразу казати українцям, на чиєму ви боці. Про те, чи Україна існує, чи вона визволяється від нацистів і тому подібне. Так, люди, які в це вірять, теж існують. Пам'ятайте, українці знають про Росію набагато більше, ніж ви. І якщо Росія припинить воювати, війни не буде. І якщо Україна припинить воювати, України не буде. Звинувачувати обидві сторони у війні – це лише звинувачувати жертву і допомагати агресору. А також рекомендую висловлювати підтримку українцям словами «Слава Україні!».
So I'm here today to talk about specifically my experience with the downing of MH17 on the 17th of July in 2014. I lost my mum and my stepdad on this flight. This was almost 9 years ago, so right at the beginning of the Ukraine war. And at first glance, you may not think of these passengers as typical victims of the Ukraine war, but unfortunately, I think civilians who are going about their business have really become the typical victims of the Ukraine war. So my mum and my stepdad, they were Carol and Michael Clancy. They were both primary school teachers in the Wollongong area. My mum had been retired for a few years and had been working as a volunteer teaching migrant English. My stepdad was still teaching and he'd literally just retired. The trip to Europe, where neither of them had ever been before, it was kind of their big trip to celebrate his retirement. It was known in the family as the big trip. There were 298 people on board flight MH17. 80 of those people were children. And I've been to the memorial in the Netherlands, and it's the bulk of it's a big garden with every tree has a name and the age and I think nationality of the victim, and there's 298 trees. And one of the things that struck me walking around is even though there's officially only 80 children were killed on the flight, there are just so many young people in their late teens, early 20s, who are obviously just going on their first trip abroad. And, you know, from my perspective, I would consider to be children. But possibly you don't get that just from looking straight at the numbers. You maybe don't get the full scale of this kind of devastation. And it's also hard to recognise the ripple effect that each of these deaths has on people around them. And when I was at the memorial, I was sitting next to an elderly Dutch couple who had lost their daughter, their son-in-law, and two grandkids on the flight. So an entire family just gone. And I don't know how you pick up after that. It's really one of the reasons why this latest war in Ukraine with all these new tragedies is just so hard to deal with. And although I'm glad that the international community seems to be finally taking it seriously, it's hard not to think that if there was a clear response like this in 2014, that maybe all this could have been avoided. So, I don't know if you remember, I struggle myself, but when MH17 was shot down, Obama was still president, and Russian disinformation was really not something we really were aware of in the West. I've honestly lost track of the number of stories we've been told about MH17. It was CIA doing a false flag, it was the Ukrainians with a plane, it was the Ukrainians with a missile, it was, and I'm not making this up, it was the frozen bodies of the previous Malaysian Airlines flight that had been used to stage the disaster. And yeah, it was all fake. I'm a paid actor. I've had 9 years of this nonsense, and honestly, some days I cope better than others. The Russian media spent the hours after this disaster bragging about how they'd shot down a Ukrainian military plane. Then, a few hours later, when it turned out it was a civilian plane, they changed their story and said, we don't have any missiles, and we've not shot down a plane. So, you can imagine, I was pretty horrified when I saw the same thing happening, when just the same playbook after a missile strike on a railway in Kramatorsk, the same thing happened. They were boasting about hitting a military target, realised they've hit civilians, and then they moved straight to, we don't have those missiles, it must have been the Ukrainians doing a false flag operation. From my experience, I just want to talk, my experience with Russian disinformation, in my experience in the West, and I don't really know what's going on with Russian disinformation in Russia, and fortunately don't have any exposure to that, but in the West it kind of works in two ways. The first is really just by attacking the very idea of truth, the idea that facts even matter. I don't think their goal is ever really to convince the majority of people that their stories are true. Their stories don't really have to be individually convincing. Their goal is just to throw up enough smoke so that people just give up and say, who could know what happened? This really wasn't helped, especially back in the early days, by media that thought balance meant giving equal time to both sides. And the second way Russian disinformation works is kind of attacks the victims and makes you give up. If anyone out there has siblings, you're probably familiar with a game called Stop Hitting Yourself. It's where you grab your brother's arms, hit him with it, and then say, stop hitting yourself, stop hitting yourself. The goal of stop hitting yourself, if you think about it, it's not really about trying to convince your younger brother that he's actually hitting himself. The goal is just, it's humiliation. The goal is to get the younger and more inexperienced and less powerful sibling to end up pathetically complaining that they're not actually hitting themselves, as though you don't know that already. It's just bullying. And being mocked by your parents' murderer about your parents' murder is really something that takes a lot out of you. And it really is just a show of power. It's not really disinformation in the sense of trying to convince someone something. It's not trying to convince anybody, really, most of the time. They're just trying to show that the truth doesn't really matter because they have power over you. I and the other families, we're very fortunate to have the Australian government support us in the joint investigation and in the ongoing criminal trial in the Netherlands. People do ask me, it's not true, Craig Kelly and commenters on Reddit do ask me, what's the point of continuing the criminal trial? It's been nearly 9 years now, Russia's never going to admit anything, why don't you just give up? So I'd like to explain just quickly why the criminal trial is important to me. Firstly, and most importantly, is that any pressure on Russia helps Ukraine. And as much as I'd like to have justice personally, and as much as I think every victim is entitled to justice personally, for me it's more important to stand together with other victims of Russian aggression. And secondly, I know they're being tried in absentia, and you're not likely to get any actual accused or responsible in the court as it stands. I think it's important that evidence is collected and that these people are named. I think it's important that history records who they are and what they did, because I believe the truth actually matters, and it's not a thing you can really escape from. And now that I've seen the first war crimes trials are starting in Ukraine, I'm sure they're also going to be asked the same silly questions. But it's important that people who commit war crimes know that there'll never really be a safe place for them. And they can't do this and remain anonymous. And as a quick aside, I can tell you that from my experience with the criminal trial, Ukrainians, their ability to collect evidence, particularly signals intelligence, is excellent. I don't get to speak to a lot of the Ukrainians directly because they're kind of, they're at the beginning of the process and I'm towards the end. But I speak to a lot of the Australian investigators and sometimes the Dutch, and they always speak very highly of the Ukrainians. And I'm sure you don't tend to hear about that part of that in the media at the moment. On the topic of media, I just want to talk quickly about dealing with media after a disaster like that. You kind of end up in a trap where you possibly don't really want to talk to the media, but if you don't, you worry that your family's going to be forgotten, or maybe they'll just make something up. And for Ukrainians at the moment, they're under the same pressure, but it's really dialed up to 11, because Ukrainians in Australia and in other Western countries know that if Ukraine drops off the news, they could lose their country. They're really under more pressure that way than I ever was. So lastly, I'd like to talk about what you can do to help Ukrainians. It's easy to think this is some faraway war that won't affect you, and I'm living proof that it isn't. Firstly, send money. After you've sent money, a quick thought experiment. If someone breaks into your house, you don't expect your friends to tell you that they hope you can negotiate a peaceful solution to this conflict. You don't expect the police to arrive and suggest that you let the home invader live in your spare room, and maybe that would be some kind of acceptable resolution. And yet, when Ukrainians are being attacked in their own home, there are plenty of people who would say exactly that. And it kind of sounds superficially nice to say things like, I hope for peace in Ukraine. And it's great that you do. But remember, Vladimir Putin also hopes for peace in Ukraine. And he's hoping for the kind of peace that you get when you don't have any Ukrainians left. And for me, all the Russians I come across these days are at Ukraine rallies, so they're all awesome and the best people you could ever meet. But remember that there is a very much pro-Putin sentiment in this country, although it's a minority. My sister-in-law is a Russian speaker. She's actually had to pull my nieces out of Russian school because of pro-war sentiments at the school. So in my experience, when someone wants to talk to me about the war in Ukraine, although I'm happy to talk about it, in the back of my head, I'm always thinking, oh my God, is this person a nutter who's gone down a YouTube rabbit hole and wants to tell me how I'm a paid crisis actor, how Ukraine doesn't exist and how Vladimir Putin's actually a really nice guy. So believe me, these people actually exist. And Ukrainians living in this country, I assume, will be meeting these people too. So I'd say when you talk to your Ukrainians, state your support clearly and up front. And remember, Ukrainians know more about what Russia is like than you do. If Russia stops fighting this war, there'll be no war. But if Ukraine stops fighting, there'll be no Ukraine. Assigning equal responsibility for a war to the victim and the perpetrator is really, it's just victim blaming. And also, my final opinion, I think a supportive, slubby Ukraine is always welcome. Thank you.
Сіднею для радіо СБС Тетяна Колдуненко.